KBOO is currently running a Kickstarter campaign to build a city of media makers. From February 8th to March 9th, you can become a media maker and help spread the word. Just go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter between now and March 9th to join.
I think we got Ashton ending on a good note there, but anyone want to follow up?
I'm good.
Mr. Jimenez, I hope we can stay in touch, but, you know, go for it, man.
Yeah, same to you. And it's so great, like nation to nation. You know, it's like almost 9:30 here in Philadelphia, and it brings almost tears to my eyes hearing that this work, this important work, is being done all across this nation, and especially by educators like you. I'm humbled to even be in this conversation with you guys. So
absolutely, me too. And yeah, I mean, there's tremendous work left to do, and there are teachers here doing that work. I want to acknowledge, you know, Courtney Palmer, Diallo Lewis, and the principal of our school, Carol Campbell, purchased Black Lives Matter t-shirts for our school. That was awesome. Thank you to everyone who's doing this work. We've got to stick together, nation to nation.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Susan, Ashton, Ismail, thanks for joining us. Thanks to our engineer, Danielle. And you've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Radio trains media makers. We believe community resilience happens when citizens know how to make their own media. For the last 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of citizen journalists to report on what goes on in the streets of Portland and far beyond. We know that with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city activated and aware through radio. Invest in Portland's future media makers and join KBOO on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
No classrooms, no teachers, no students at KBOO. Only community members sharing their skills with one another and passing on what they have learned from another DJ to the next generation of programmer. We believe we all have something to teach and we all have something to learn. Knowledge should be free to access. Your support of KBOO ensures this. Help us build a city of artists, media makers. Long live DIY Radio and join us on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
Baby, you understand me now.
Greetings, good evening, and welcome to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding the institution of incarceration. And we have a special guest tonight. We're going to be patched on the phone here in a minute with folks down in Florida with a group, a collective, if you will, called Toxic Prisons. And they have a project, ongoing project here called the Operation Push, which is P-U-S-H. And we're going to be online here with Patagione. Are you with us?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
All right, thanks for being on with us. You know, it's a little bit later back east, down in Florida. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in the organization, the ongoing work?
Yeah. My name is Panayoti Chulkis, and I'm based in Florida, but spent a lot of time traveling and doing organizing work, largely with the environmental movement, and specifically the environmental direct action movement. And so in that, you know, in that organizing work, I've dealt with criminal charges myself and have known people in and out of jails and prisons for environmental actions. And through that experience personally, and also corresponding with people and learning about their experiences, you know, it opened my eyes to what was happening inside prisons and some of the overlap between, you know, various movements for prisoner rights and for environmental justice. And so, you know, over the recent years, I've been a part of developing that work into a project called the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons. And we've taken on organizing nationally at this intersection of environmental justice and mass incarceration. And more recently, have been focusing work in Florida, as well as a couple other states where there's active campaigns.
Can you tell us more about what's going on right now, what's going on the ground in Florida? A lot of our listeners, we're here in the Northwest and in Portland, you know, and not everybody necessarily knows what's going on in the prisons here, but especially all the way down south. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah. First, I want to say that, you know, we're really grateful for the outpouring of support to folks that do know about it and have been sending their support our way. You know, it's been awesome because way down here in the south, a lot of times, you know, things do go with less attention. And in particular, you know, the prison system has a really bad reputation in states like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and, you know, these southern states essentially, you know, transitioned from slavery to the prison system within a matter of years, really. Like Florida, for example, you know, slavery was ended more or less around 1865, and the DOC was born in Florida, and I believe it was 1868, somewhere about 4 or 5 years later. So, you know, states like Florida have this prison system that basically inherited plantation politics, and there's been a series in recent years, a series of prisoner organizing efforts that have led to strikes and uprising on the inside. And just about 3 months ago, prisoners announced this intention that they called Operation Push to kick off a wave of work stoppages and demonstrations and boycotts on the inside of solidarity. And it began on Martin Luther King Day, January 15th. And we've been, you know, collecting stories of what's been happening on the inside. Mm-hmm. They're slowly trickling out. So I don't know if there's specific questions you have about what that's been like or about how, you know, other things you want to talk about.
That's a great segue, actually, for your excellent outreach materials here. And it's a particular YouTube that we're going to hear from about the first 2 minutes of. And if anybody's looking it up on YouTube, it's the hashtag Operation Push in Florida, from behind the bars and in the streets. Do you want to say anything about it before we go ahead and play this?
Yeah, just really quickly, I want to note that, you know, the prisoner who's speaking in this is doing so anonymously, and what we've found, I'll talk more about this after the clip, is there's been an incredible amount of retaliation, repression, and pretty extreme and brutal conditions, you know, in attempt to stop Operation Push from spreading. So this prisoner, who happens to be up in North Florida prison, we call the prison belt, there's almost a prison in every county, and you know, he took on some great risk to himself to do the interview that was used in this YouTube video you mentioned, which also includes a series of photos and videos from solidarity demonstrations that have been happening over the last several weeks.
Okay, and here you go. So hashtag Operation Push in Florida, from behind the bars and in the streets. Check it out on YouTube.
Well, Operation Push is a nonviolent protest to get what we deserve from our government. They use wordplay and deceive the public about what really goes on inside the system, and we want to expose those things as well as make changes that will benefit us as inmates and also society at large. There are various industries that are run by inmates, and we intend to sit down and refuse to work, have an economic protest, if you would, to try to bring about change. We want to open up dialogue with the governing parties that oversee the prison system. We want to bring parole. By bringing parole back, it would force inmates to have certification from anger management to Narcotics Anonymous. They got to get GEDs. They got to stay out of trouble for a certain period of time just to meet the criteria to be eligible for parole. So it would cut down the violence that takes place in prison, and it would also, you know, ensure that every person is equipped with what they need to re-enter into society. We want to be paid for the work that we do as well, so that somebody doesn't end up doing 10, 15, 20 years not being paid and sent home with a bus ticket and a $50 check. We want to create an environment where someone can do their time, be rehabilitated, and enter into society with some type of hope and not hopelessness. I joined this action because I have been subject to the system, and I see all the flaws, and I see our people being destroyed, you know, from lack of knowledge, from a lack of opportunity. So I want to organize for change so that I can, you know, help to do whatever I can to create a system that is being described to the public, a system that protects the public and the best interests of the public.
You've been hearing from Florida prisoner from a recent prisoner strike and work stoppage going on down there, and we're here with folks from Toxic Prisons talking about these efforts and the extraneous retaliation that's going on amongst the prisoners. So can you talk about the kind of retaliation that folks are getting in just for basically speaking their minds, addressing their human rights, and in this case making certain demands on the state, on the particular institutions?
Yeah, well, you know, I want to kind of highlight some of the things that were brought up in the interview with the prisoner who just spoke, and we're grateful that interview was able to come out, really, because had it happened any, you know, 2 days later, it probably would have been impossible, and you might never have heard from that person. Shortly after the interview was conducted, we started slowly getting word from people, actually more so not getting word, which is how we figured out that things had already, you know, pressure already started building on the inside. It was a series of shakedowns, an attempt to get rid of, you know, the cell phones that people use for independent means of communication. It's one of the kind of contradictions, you know, of the prison system. There's so much corruption that you can get things like cell phones in, and use them to document the corruption. And but, you know, with the building movement like this, the administration of the FDC, the Florida Department of Corrections, sought to figure out or single out who they thought might be involved in the organizing, and you know, removing cell phones from facilities, which in some cases, you know, people, they're prevalent, but they're not easy to come by. So it's a huge loss. You know, a lot of people are able to use a cell phone. A whole, you know, cell block could be sharing a cell phone, and by doing that, not having to pay the exorbitant phone costs. And so in any ways, you know, these shakedowns that took the cell phone was a huge limitation. But beyond that, on the day that the strike was announced to start, we heard reports back from facilities where even the state phones were cut off. So essentially the attempt to eliminate communication options and minimize, you know, the amount that people could reach out to their families and communities and loved ones and their organizational affiliations. we found out about retaliation taking the shape of relocations to other facilities, prisoners being shipped around, an attempt to divide up any growing unity in certain prisons and prison units. We also found the use of solitary confinement, but specifically strip cells, which is, you know, a step above solitary confinement, that's supposed to be used for prisoners who are at risk of self-harm. But in Florida, as in other states, they're used for torture, you know, for subjecting prisoners who are non-compliant to conditions that are, you know, in this case, you know, people think of Florida as being hot, and in the summertime in these prisons, most of the complaints are that it's, you know, it's terribly hot and dangerously hot. But this time of year in North Florida, you know, we've had a series of frosts where it's dropped below freezing, and people in strip cells with no extra clothes or blankets being subjected to temperatures below freezing with windows that don't close. And we got a report specifically from a prisoner named Kevin Rashid Johnson, who's one of the few people who said, yes, use my name, tell the world I'm being tortured. He happens to be a very eloquent writer and artist and jailhouse lawyer. And so, you know, he was particularly effective in reaching out and mobilizing his support network. But really, you know, his case represented one example of a widespread retaliation against anyone not who had been organizing, but that was suspected as a potential organizer. In his case, he wrote an article about Operation Push. You know, he's already in a closed management facility. He's already in the solitary confinement unit at Florida State Prison. He has limited to no contact with other prisoners. So he was just, you know, writing an article based on what he had heard or read about from other news outlets or support people.
Yeah.
That
he, Rashid, you know. Rashid was also out here in Oregon for a very, very brief stint. And for any folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. And we're here with folks from Choxic Prisons talking about prisoner-led efforts down in Florida that is ongoing and intermittent, and hearing the voices of those prisoners. You can check it out at hashtag Operation Push in Florida, from behind the bars and in the streets. Now, one other question, too. Some people might be familiar with the fact that a large population of prisoners are in California. It's a large state and has a lot of facilities, and so is Florida. So can you talk a little bit about that? You did mention that Florida has a lot of prisons, and can you talk a little bit about that landscape, how that relates to how these folks are also getting moved around and what have you?
Right. Well, Florida is the third largest prison population in the country, next to California and Texas. And so there's 145 facilities, 43 major prisons, and then the others are some are work camps, kind of satellite work camps, where people are sent out on, you know, jobs working as for slave labor for the Department of Transportation or for other government agencies, for city and county governments. So the prison is really like, you know, there's a lot of prison culture, prison towns, in especially North Florida, and you know, it makes it. These areas are already pretty remote and rural, but the local economies are often, you know, desperately clinging on to the prison jobs, and so it creates this, you know, this element of political kind of challenge or conflict to try to advocate against the use of prisons or the expansion of prisons when you have these rural, low-income communities that are tied to the, you know, the prison jobs that exist. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of other rural communities across the country see a similar dynamic. That's something that definitely plays out in Florida.
Right.
And even kind of on top of that, looking at the, you know, extraction industries that often parallel, you know, the prisons in these rural communities. And there's some kind of, yeah, I think you can draw these connections between the work we've been doing in Appalachia around prisons existing or proposed in the coal fields and the prisons down here where there's proposed phosphate mining operations, in some of the existing prison counties. And so those are some of the dynamics that, you know, that we're seeing at play on the, you know, the geography and landscape.
Right. And there's a lot of prisoners and there's a lot of prisons around the country. And then we have these states that are very dense. And then for you in your activism, this is one example of, you know, being in one particular, you know, part of Florida and then trying to address the larger statewide issues. And so for our listeners, what is, you know, organizing look like on the ground? Because I think sometimes people get a little bit confused or apprehensive when we talk about what is, you know, what does it look like on the outside of organizing of with and for prisoners on the inside, and what does that work entail, and how does capacity play into it, right, when you have so many people who can plug into this work and help to try to help, again, such a large population of prisoners?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's something that we've been also grappling with. But I can give some examples of, of what we've been up to and what we have in store, which I think might answer that question in the best way. You know, here, and I'm based in Gainesville, which has a good-sized community of activists and organizers and some peripheral support from a college nearby. And so we have been able to, you know, have a steady kind of schedule of prisoner letter writing events and, you know, community activities that bring people in to connect with prisoners on a personal level or to hear from speakers or films that, you know, bring issues related to prisons, you know, closer to home and make people more familiar. We're also coordinating upcoming later this month with the National Lawyers Guild campus chapter at University of Florida. They're doing a series of events and panels and a prison book drive and you know, activities that will engage students and faculty in the issues surrounding prisons that we've been talking about. So we've been, you know, that's some way we've been trying to grow our capacity and connect with several communities in this, you know, geographic region. We've also been doing a series of demonstrations at the prisons, which is a lot more difficult to get people to leave the comfortable bubble of a college town, but we've had success in getting numbers, you know, 50, 60 people to come out to some of these demonstrations and make them real loud enough that, you know, the prisoners can hear and see us. We've been doing a regular demonstration at the local work camp, which is where prison slaves are sent out on assignments. And so, you know, it's a smaller facility. There's about 300 people there. But these are the same people that you see, you know, on the streets, cleaning up, you know, streets and alleys. And so creating, you know, some relationship that when we see these people, you know, that we can give them a nod or a heads up that, you know, that they have support. We've also done a yard sign campaign. So all over town, really all over the state, we've spread these yard signs that say end prison slavery on one side and we support prisoners on strike on the other. And those signs have popped up all over. But I know just from this town where, you know, prison labor is common, that they see our signs and they know that there's support on the outside. And so when they hear us on a bullhorn out in front of the prison, they know who we are. And that's one way that we've tried to break down, you know, the barrier that's intended to be kept between people on the inside and people on the outside.
Right. And maybe, of course, the term could have been used before the September 9th national organizing, but did also become a national slogan for that. The September 9th of, well, about 2 years ago now, that commemorated the Attica uprising. And it appears maybe that, you know, people are becoming more organized, you know, inside and outside around some of these issues. What do you think about that?
That was a huge turning point here on 2016 in September. You know, a lot of prisoners engaged, and people on the outside, I think, were sort of surprised at how, you know, how we were able, unexpectedly able to support by doing a simple series of mailings, you know, telling people what we've been hearing on the outside about the buildup, and then following up with support, you know, letters and mass mailings. You know, we were able to compile a series of stories that we published into a little booklet called Plantation Rising, which you can check out. There's a PDF online, or you can get a hard copy if you want to shoot us a note and ask for it. So, you know, that experience September 9th was really, I think, kind of galvanizing for us on the inside and the outside. And we still have still a regular point of reference that, you know, prisoners write to us and tell us their stories. Some of them are still in solitary confinement or facing, you know, disciplinary challenges that have, you know, stemmed from either the September uprisings that happened here in over 10 facilities, or just from the fallout, you know, from corresponding with outside organizations that are now considered what they call security threat groups. You know, they've deemed the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons a gang, essentially now. It's one of the groups monitored as a security threat group. We did a public records request, and we were able to find 90 other organizations that are also have been monitored mm-hmm. by the FDC administration. So we're in the process of reaching out to those groups and mm-hmm. making sure they know that they're being monitored by the prison system.
That's around mail
support.
That's around mail rejections as well, or
yeah, not, you know, that and just monitoring their social media mm-hmm. presence.
Right.
Right.
So
mail rejections is definitely a huge part of it too.
Yeah. So really, in a way, I mean, there's definitely, you know, huge disadvantage for these groups. At the same time, it sounds like the advantage on the bright side is that means that the work is actually effective, right? Because the state is like paying attention.
Right. Yeah, that's what we think. Mm-hmm. You know, in months to come, maybe even a year out, we'll be able to look back and actually measure the impact of Operation Push, looking at how much, you know, so the work stoppage component in many ways was challenged because, in part, because it was announced early to build momentum. It also allowed the prison system time to, you know, devise a plan for dividing people, for, you know, gathering scabs that weren't engaged or invested in the movement.
Mm-hmm.
But we know already, we know there's an economic toll. I mean, we've been hearing from prisoners saying over the recent weeks they've been doubling and tripling staff because of this fear that there's tension building around, you know, the basic demands that were presented. You know, the person was that we played the audio clip from was talking about. And even though they're, you know, the movement is not intended to be using violence, but, you know, it's very common that in these work stoppages very quickly turn into situations where the state cracks down with tear gas and pepper spray and, you know, turns something into a violent situation pretty quick.
Right.
So, you know, that reality, I think, is there, and we're keeping an eye on it and hoping to minimize, you know, the level of total brutality by just having, you know, a light shining from the outside. And so we appreciate, you know, any support people can offer and allowing us to continue to do that.
Sure. In our last couple of minutes, very briefly, what are those resources? How can people connect? Again, you know, you got folks out here in the Northwest that are hearing about it, maybe for the first time or already supporting it, but want to learn more about it, maybe get more involved. So how do people plug in? What are some links people should be looking out for?
Yeah, well, one of the entities that popped up around the same time and not directly related but has been really helpful is SPARC. Stands for Supporting Prisoners and Real Change. It was inspired by Kevin Rashid Johnson, which, as you said, he was also out there in the Pacific Northwest. You know, eventually they kicked him over to Virginia out in the Appalachian prison gulag, and then down to Texas, and I guess they figured, you know, Texas couldn't handle him, so they sent him, I guess, Florida to the end of the line.
Well, he was, yeah, and he was already in Virginia before that in the first place.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so Rashid inspired this Facebook, the social media entity, SPARC, which essentially just publishes articles and letters and testimony from people on the inside. That has been an excellent vehicle for communicating updates about the strike and about retaliation, so people can check that out. Also, you know, some of the event planning has been utilizing that for outreach. So we have a series of things coming up. I mentioned one of them is March 8th in Tallahassee. We'll be going back to the Department of Corrections headquarters in the Capitol, which we had a demonstration there to kick off the strike last month. So you can find out more about that at the SPARC page. The Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons has, you know, social media accounts, a website, fighttoxicprisons.org, and Facebook and Twitter accounts by the same name. And those have also been, we've been publishing updates and announcements and analysis articles. We have a new update that's about to be, probably tomorrow will be released, kind of compiling the last several weeks of letters and putting them into one kind of easy link to show the world, you know, what we've been hearing so far about Operation Push.
When's the last conference or next conference?
Good question. The next conference for the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons is going to be in Pittsburgh, and everyone's invited to come out. It's going to be June 8th through the 11th. This will be the third annual national conference that Fight Toxic Prisons has hosted, and they've so far the last two were excellent, and it'll be great to get more people out there from the West Coast.
That's this year in 2018, right?
Yep.
All right. So a lot to look forward to, folks. And thanks so much for being on, and we'd love to have you back on. And maybe before the conference, we can help to rub that up out here again. So you have been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Of course, big thanks to our guest, Toxic Prisons. Check it out. Learn about it. Know about it. And, of course, thanks to our lovely engineer, Danielle Parks, in the booth. Have a great evening. Free them all, and we'll see you next week.
KBOO is building a city of media makers. We believe that strong, resilient communities know how to make their own media. For 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio. We know that, with our expertise and your support, we can keep the city activated and aware through radio that we make together. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today. Look us up, search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.